Hello, this is the podcast, and today we're going to be discussing the reforms of Henry II, specifically his financial reforms. And this is a podcast specifically made for my own purposes, and I'm going to be just briefly going through the reforms that Henry II did in his reign, in particular financial reforms, as I previously said. So the question we're going to be asking today is, how successful were his financial reforms? There's a question in the textbook, which goes, it's basically along the lines of evaluating the extent to which his financial reforms were very successful. So we're going to do two, we're going to just plan two paragraphs for and two paragraphs against. So the first paragraph is going to talk about the coinage. We're going to talk about how the coinage reforms centralised and standardised the coinage. So in particular, Henry II used Richard Fitz-Nigel's Dialogue of the Exchequer to standardise these procedures. The problem, of course, with England was that barons in specific geographical areas, in specific towns, were making their own mints, and that took authority away from the king, and it also meant that barons were, for example, establishing their own mini-kingdoms. And also it was just really damaging for the economy because obviously you've got lots of different mints, lots of different coinages. There's no centralisation or coherence there. So clearly coinage was immensely important to establishing and enforcing the authority of Henry II's reign. But more to the point, so Richard Fitz-Nigel, his first coinage was in 1158, and this coinage basically meant that established moneys were dismissed, and they were also charged heavy fines for substandard coinage, and that was important for ensuring that there were high standards of coinage, which was in turn important for enforcing royal authority for the reasons that we've just said, for the making a good economy and making sure authority is standardised and the king's at the head of everything. Before the 1158 recoinage, from 1154 to 1158, there was a reduction of mints from 47 to 29. I think I've got that right. That absolutely is right. So there's a reduction of 47 to 29 mints, 1154 to 1158. However, there was a drawback to this. The clipping of coins continued, and in fact the 1160 purge of money is perfectly illustrates this. It was not totally successful by any means in addressing declining coinage quality. But Henry II was adaptable. He was a very adaptable man. He always was, and he ever shall be. More to the point, the 1176 Assizes of Northampton punished forgery by making it a capital offence, and the 1180 recoinage further centralised moneys, giving them salaries and bringing them together. So just to reiterate that, the 1176 Assizes of Northampton punished forgery by making it a capital offence, and the 1180 recoinage further centralised moneys, giving them salaries and bringing them together. And of course, as we've already discussed, this meant a better functioning economy, bringing in more revenue, better functioning trade, bearing in mind issues around the wool trade at that time. And indeed, it literally centralised authority, because the king's head was literally placed on coins, reinforcing his head at the top of the feudal system. And it took the power out of the hands of the barons, quite literally. So the coinage was successful overall. He adapted to his initial failures, he overcame his weaknesses, and he was all around a fantastically adaptable king. So that would be the first paragraph. Now I'm just going to have a quick commercial break, and then we will be back talking about the vigorous inquiries into land loss through Prestre and Eschiette. Okay, you join us back after the break. So now we're going to be talking about the vigorous inquiries into land lost through Prestre and Eschiette, which took back lands lost since the anarchy. as we know, the anarchy was during the reign of Stephen and Matilda. There was conflict between the two, and it ripped England apart. It meant the barons were establishing their own mini kingdoms. There was no centralisation or coherence in how the kingdom was governed. But more to the point, there were vigorous inquiries that Henry II did. He did them into land lost to Professor Nesciat, took back lands lost since the anarchy. And he did this through pipe rolls, which were an innovation of Bishop Nigel. They were used to determine that the farm was not being paid in Bedfordshire and Hampshire. So to reiterate that, pipe rolls, the innovation of Bishop Nigel, were being used to determine that the farm was not being paid in Bedfordshire and Hampshire. And to give a brief example of where exactly these pipe rolls made a difference and where it could be shown that the farm wasn't being paid. Land taken back from Hugh by God saw the farms in Norfolk and Suffolk increase hugely. Indeed, there was an increase in the farm from 5,000 in 1154 to 6,000 in 1162. This was clearly enormously effective. There were also other more minor taxes, for example, the Donner, which was a tax used on specific occasions, for example, the 1158 failed expedition to Toulouse. But there were also drawbacks to some of Henry II's financial reforms. For example, there was more vigorous imposition of forest laws. But this sounds, of course, like a good thing, of course. Vigorously enforcing forest laws was surely a good thing, given that it increased authority, increased revenues and that sort of thing, centralised authorities. But actually it wasn't, and it's for this very specific reason. The forest laws were really, really unpopular. They're unpopular for farmers, people working the land, and they were a serious drawback to Henry II's authority, causing massive resentment among the proletariat and the ordinary workers and the masses and the farmers. But on the other hand, they did gain lots of revenue. For example, in 1175-76, they gained £1,295 from Wiltshire alone. And even though their total proportion of income from the forest law fell, it was actually broadly successful, and actually its declining proportion of the total income was only because he was quite successful in other areas. So the forest laws then were actually effective, even if they did in the short term cause some resentment towards Henry II and his reign more broadly. But there is another paragraph that we can do. For instance, the way that Henry II revived the Danegeld, and this was an ancient tax from ancient times, from the times of the wildy, when ancient Bigfoot beasts roamed the land looking for stray children and munching up peasants who happened to leave their land. But more to the point, Henry II revived the Danegeld, but it proved incredibly unpopular and inefficient. And to illustrate this, 24% of it was written off as waste. Now that is a huge amount. 24% is 1% less than a quarter, or 25%. Now this is a lot of tax being written off as waste. And indeed, we can see this in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. It said that vast amounts of tax were being squandered because during the anarchy there was such a lack of enforcement, there was a lack of centralisation. Long claims and titles had got lost and confused, claims to land had got very confused. So the Danegeld then was incredibly unpopular, and it was also very inefficient. There were also loads and loads of exemptions granted because it was just too difficult to enforce. But this isn't to say that Henry II was completely unsuccessful, because again, he adapted. He was an adaptable king. He was the most adaptable king in all of Christendom, in all of medieval Europe, indeed in the world. He was more adaptable than Mutsuphilus, the man who was supposed to have lived for 960 years. Clearly he adapted to changing circumstances. But more to the point, Henry II introduced the tallage. He introduced the tallage because the Danegeld was too crap. It was written off. Lots of it was written off. It was waste. So Henry introduced the tallage, which was levied on tenants by a lord from the royal demesne. I don't know if it's called demesne or demesne. I'll just call it Demesne because it's easier. So Henry introduced a tallage which was levied on tenants by a lord from the royal Demesne. And although it raised less than the geld, it was far more predictable and more popular. But it is also true that, for example, the 1168 and 1172 attempts to raise the scutage fell into arrears. So just to give a bit of context behind this, if I was doing this essay, I'd probably add that on to the end, I would say. Although Henry, I'd start off with a negative. So obviously this is a paragraph I'm against now. So Henry II revived the Danegeld, which was unpopular and inefficient, 24% written off as waste. But Henry introduced the tallage, and although it raised less than the geld, it was far more predictable and far more popular. And in fact, predictability, of course, is incredibly important just for raising royal revenues and establishing exactly how much money Henry had. But 1168 and 1172 attempts to raise the scutage fell into arrears. And arrears is where it meant that that nobles were so indebted that they were literally rendered bankrupt. But actually, again, this was an extremely effective method of control. Of course, having barons in debt to the crown means that the crown effectively has complete jurisdiction over them. Barons are incredibly vulnerable if they do not have financial independence, as of course we know from Right to Buy. But more to the point, the scutage centralised authority. It meant that those barons who posed more of a threat were taxed more. Specifically, Henry reformed, to put this in context, Henry reformed the servitium debitum, which I think is how you say it, away from taxing. I can't remember what it exactly taxed, but he basically moved it so that it taxed the number of knights. Oh yeah, I think it was the number of knights that a lord owed allegiance to a lord, or was MFOF'd by a lord. But this with loads of exceptions to it. And it was a pretty crap way of doing it. And I think that basically covers everything. So I'm just going to, we're going to have another break, and then I'm just going to summarise everything that we've said so far. So in this fantastic first episode of my A-level history podcast for my exam, scarily close, we've gone through four key issues. Now we've gone through two points for and two points against the idea that Henry II's reforms, his financial reforms, were successful. The first thing we went through was the coinage, and we said that Henry's re-coinage centralised and standardised the coinage by centralising and standardising coinage practices through Richard Fitz-Nigel's Dialogue of the Exchequer. In particular, the 1158 re-coinage meant established monies were dismissed and they were charged heavy fines for substandard coinage. From 1154 to 1158, there was a decline in the total number of mints from 47 to 29. However, the clipping of coins continued. But the 1160 purge of moneys, or rather the 1160 purge of moneys, illustrates that his 1158 recoinage was not completely successful in addressing declining coinage quality. But along comes the shining knight in armour, the 1176 Assize of Northampton, which punished forgery by making it a capital offence. And then the 1180 recoinage further centralised moneys, giving them salaries and bringing them together. So overall, we've got the 1158 recoinage, 1160 purge of moneys, the 1176 assize of Northampton, and then the 1180 recoinage, which further centralised moneys, giving them salaries. So overall, we saw an increase in revenue because of Henry II's financial reforms. It literally centralised authority due to having the king's head on coins, and it took power out of the hands of the barons. So overall, this was incredibly successful. The second thing we talked about was vigorous inquiries into land lost through perpetua and escheat, which took back lands lost since the anarchy. pipe rolls were used to determine that the farm was not being paid in Bedfordshire and Hampshire. Land taken back from Hugh Bigod saw farms in Norfolk and Suffolk increase hugely. There was an increase in farms overall from 5,000 in 1154 to 6,000 in 1162. Further, but rather on the third paragraph, which is, we're going against the question now, we're saying Spanish reforms were not successful. The more vigorous imposition of forest laws proved extremely unpopular, provoking popular resentment towards the king's authority. However, they were the more vigorous imposition of the forest laws was it did increase revenue. For example, the 1175 recoin forest laws sort of round or whatever raised £1,295. Although as a total proportion of income the forest law fell, it was successful. This is just because of general success in increasing revenues. Now, the final paragraph is about the Danegeld. So, Henry II revived the Danegeld, but it was unpopular and inefficient. 24% of it was written off as waste. There were too many exceptions granted. But Henry, therefore, introduced the tallage. And although this raised less than the geld, it was far more predictable and it was far more popular. Nevertheless, there were further drawbacks. The 1168 and 1172 attempts to raise the scutage fell into arrears. However, this was an effective method of control because it meant the barons were in debt to the crown, which is good for royal authority. It made the barons very vulnerable. So actually, what we saw was a scutage reforming the servitium debitum, centralising authority, and meaning that those barons that held more knights paid more money to the crown. And that's basically all we would say. So overall, we would say Henry II's financial reforms were definitely successful. And I think that is all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening. And tune in next time we do the Henry II podcast.